children grow up to be responsible, healthy adults is a desire we all have, but we want to be friends with them when they get there. In The Secret, Scott and Joanne share how parents can equip their children for life while becoming their partner at the same time. You'll appreciate the three strategies for partnering with your children provided on this tape. When you put The Secret into practice, you will find your children appreciating you more and coming to you for advice and counsel.
Parents often come to us when they're feeling frustrated. They're overwhelmed by parenting. They're burned out. They don't know what to do. And we try and encourage them and share some ideas that can help a parent to have the motivation to continue on when you're feeling just tired of parenting. You're burned out. Things aren't working. And that's what we're going to share with you tonight, a secret that will help to give you the motivation to continue on when you feel like quitting. Now, have you ever noticed when children are young, maybe they reach around 6 or 7, they develop this really corny sense of humor? Well, my kids love to tell jokes. They're always telling each other jokes. They're making up jokes, and, you know, you think, what, you know? Or they're telling those knock-knock jokes that you've heard over and over again, and they're brand new to your kids, and your kids just love them and are having a great time with them, and you're kind of tired of hearing them. Well, you know, there's one joke that I really enjoy. It's for moms. It's, why do mother kangaroos hate it when it rains? Well, because the children have to play inside. Well, parenting can be frustrating sometimes, and we can become overwhelmed and be having a hard time with it. I think sometimes we want to ignore the problems that we see. We just get tired of being a mom or being a dad. And the secret that we're going to share with you tonight will help to give you the motivation to continue on when you feel like just giving up, when you're just tired and you've had it.
Imagine that you're resting on the couch in the evening after a hard day at work or a busy day around the house during the day. And you just feel like reading and enjoying yourself. You just don't want to get up. You just want to sit there.
Then all of a sudden, one of your children comes in the room and says, your 2-year-old is out the door and got into the street.
You jump up and run out the door. All of a sudden, you have all this extra energy. Where did it come from?
Well, you know that your child is in imminent danger. You're not going to just sit back and say, well, when I finish this article, I'll go help him. No, you know the danger that your child is in, and all of a sudden you have the energy to jump up and run out and help him.
In the same way, allowing children to misbehave and get away with it puts them in danger. And we need to recognize that as parents, because it actually is true. Then when children act out, when they are disobedient and are not corrected, it puts them in danger of their future, of their character. Those things then are jeopardized. If we as parents can recognize that our children who are misbehaving and not being corrected are in danger, it'll motivate us to want to get up off the couch and deal with them sometimes.
I think this is a helpful way to look at disciplining of our children. If we see that our children are in danger when they're not responding to our discipline, I think that can give us the motivation to respond more quickly with our children with the discipline because we see the danger that they're in. Now, we talk about strong-willed children. Those are the children that are hard to control. They're stubborn. They just have a strong will about them, and they're hard to manage. Well, we need to be, as parents, we need to be strong-willed parents, not in a stubborn or obstinate way, but we want to be able to persevere. We need to press on, even when it's difficult to be a parent. We want to have that determination about us that continues on, even when it's difficult.
Parenting is quite enjoyable for most moms and dads. Children can be a challenge at times, but we enjoy having their company around most of the time. And we enjoy being pleased by them or pleasing them. That's part of the enjoyment of having children.
But I think there are those times for every one of us when we just like to be alone. Or we'd like to be spontaneous, or we'd like to just go out and do our own thing and not have to worry about the kids all the time. I think we all feel that way sometimes. And what we'd like to do then is be able to focus on our calling as a parent, be able to fall back on some foundational truths that will give us the motivation to continue on to persevere in our call as parenting, even when we don't quite feel like it.
Parenting is tough sometimes. I mean, sometimes moms wish they could go somewhere to resign. I mean, they just feel like, oh, give me a break. One mother of 3 notoriously unruly children was asked, if you could do it all over again, would you have children? She thought for a moment and she said, yes, but maybe not the same ones. Well, the secret we're going to share with you this evening is one that all parents need. All of us feel tired at times. All of us get discouraged. We feel like giving up.
We found that the secret to persevering and being consistent is to have a clear philosophy of discipline. Let's talk a minute about why we correct our children. If I were to say to you, well, why do you discipline your children? You might think for a minute and say, well, you know, I want them to be mature, responsible adults. You know, I want to do the right thing for them. But if we think about it for a minute, you really think about day to day, why is it that you correct your children? I think sometimes we come up with a little bit of a different answer. I think sometimes parents discipline their children really for their own good, maybe to stop their children from embarrassing them, or their children are being irritating, so they just discipline them when they're irritating them and things like that. I think we don't always discipline really just for our child's good.
Sometimes we discipline them because they're irritating or they embarrass us. It reminds me of one mom who was trying to manage her four-year-old in the front row at church, but her four-year-old was entertaining the whole church during the hymns, during the announcement. This child was making all kinds of antics, and when prayer time was coming, so the mom realized she better take this child out. So she starts taking him down, and he doesn't want to go, so he's dragging his heels, and everybody has their eyes fixed on this mom and this child as they're walking up the aisle to the back of the church trying to get out of there. And the little boy, he realizes at the last minute, you know, as he's going out the door, what is soon to be realized fate will be. And so he says, "Oh my goodness, somebody pray." That was a hard act for that poor minister to follow. But sometimes children embarrass us, don't they?
So why do we discipline or not discipline our children? I think there are really two standards working here. I think all of us would like to be disciplining our children for the right reasons all the time. But I think sometimes we slip into a convenience mode and we discipline our children when it's convenient to discipline them, when they're irritating us, they're embarrassing us. And that's really what motivates us to discipline our children. And in the end, then our discipline is inconsistent and it's unproductive. I know that there was times in my parenting of my children that I was inconsistent. I remember a time when David was 2 years old, we had a rule that he wasn't to jump on the couch. It's kind of a typical rule, you know, kids can get a little crazy. So we had a rule that he wasn't to jump on the couch. Now, I know that there were times when he was jumping on the couch and I was doing my own thing and I just let it go. I mean, I was involved in my own activity and at least he was quiet and taken care of. So I ignored what he was doing because I was involved in something else. And what he was doing was wrong. It needed to be corrected. But I chose not to correct him because it wasn't convenient for me at the time. And the irritation of what he was doing wasn't irritating enough to me to cause me to take action. I believe often a discipline of our children is based on our own convenience and our own level of irritation at the time. I'd like to suggest that often that's true with most parents, that we discipline our children to get them to stop irritating us or so they don't embarrass us at the grocery store or to make them socially acceptable. But the problem is that if that's why we're disciplining our children, then our discipline is inconsistent and unproductive.
It's inconsistent because what bothers us one day may not bother us another. It's inconsistent because we may have the energy one day to deal with a particular problem, but we may not have it another day. And so what ends up happening is that we become a little more irritated and irritated, and then we explode, and the anger becomes the motivation for us to get up off that couch and do something about it. The problem with anger is that our children feel insecure. They never know what's going to happen, and that anger often hurts quite a bit in a family.
We find that many parents have this kind of pattern in their family, of this pattern of parenting, where they wait until their irritation builds, until they're so irritated they have to do something about it, and then they explode in anger. And that's kind of how the parenting works in that family. Imagine this scenario. You're making dinner, and your four-year-old daughter comes in, and she's hungry. She wants something to eat. And you say, "Well, I'm making dinner. I want you to wait." And she starts whining and complaining, "Oh, I'm starving." And you say, no, you need to wait. You need to wait. And, "Oh, but I haven't had anything to eat all day." You know, "Come on, you just had a snack a little while ago. I want you to just wait." "Oh," and she continues to whine and complain. So you say, "Okay, you can have a banana or an apple." "Oh, I don't like bananas. I don't want an apple." So the irritation is building, but you're trying to maintain control here. You kind of keep her, no, we're not going to have anything to eat now then. And she continues to whine and complain. Finally, you say, "Okay, you can have a cookie and a little glass of milk." Okay, so she's all excited now. She's won. She jumps up. She knocks the milk over. "Well, you've had it now. That's the last straw." What is it that caused you to lose control, though? Was it the spilled milk or was it the 15 minutes of whining and complaining? I think often we let things go and we don't act on them initially, and then the irritation builds, and that's what motivates us to discipline our children, and we wait until we explode before we do anything about the problem.
The secret to persevering and being consistent is having a clear philosophy of discipline. Now, what is a philosophy of discipline? What that is a series of truths that you believe. I mean, there are a lot of principles out there today about parenting, many of them contradictory. You've got to choose some foundational ones. When you cut through everything, there's some foundational truths that you're going to lay down there. They're going to help you to know where you're headed. Why am I parenting? What am I going to do? What are the foundational truths that are going to guide me in the course of these things? Now, when you have those, your parenting will be more motivated by love than by anger. You'll have a greater ability to provide security for your children in the midst of that, and you yourself will be able to persevere. Perseverance is patient instruction day after day, being able to hang in there and stay there because you believe something and because you know it's right. So if we can have a foundational understanding in parenting when we come into the job, then some of those challenges will not be as great for us, and we'll be able to overcome them and be consistent and persevere.
We believe that if you take some time to think about why you're parenting, what are the foundational truths that are important to you, that will help you to have the motivation then to be consistent in your parenting. We're going to share with you four truths tonight about discipline that we believe are very important in this whole idea of parenting and discipline. They can be foundational truths for you that you can build upon, and they can give you the motivation to continue on when you're tired or you feel like giving up. We think that these four truths are very important, and you'll want to think about them. You may want to add some of your own truths. Maybe there's some other reasons why you're disciplining your children, things that you believe are important that you want to build into your own philosophy of discipline, and that's fine. But we think having that philosophy of discipline, knowing what it is very important to help you to be consistent and to persevere as you work with your children. What we're going to do now is we're going to share with you four vignettes of some make-believe counseling sessions. We're going to share some problems with you, and then after each one of those situations, we're going to share one of the truths that we believe is important to remember when it comes to disciplining children.
So you have a son named Johnny. How's it going with Johnny? He's about 4 years old?
Yeah, Johnny's four. We're having such a hard time with him.
Oh, tell me about it.
In fact, I'm just so tired. You know, Johnny just doesn't go to bed at night. I don't know what the problem is. I mean, I send him to bed, and I tuck him in, and I say goodnight. And then I go down to sit in the living room and read my book. Well, wouldn't you know it, next thing Johnny's sitting next to me, he doesn't stay in bed. He comes on down, he sits next to me, he starts asking me questions. I send him back to bed, but he doesn't listen. And so I let him sit with me for a little while, and, you know, I'm trying to read my book, and he wants a drink. And finally, okay, Johnny, you need to go to bed. And I send him back to bed, but it's just so hard. I'm really tired. You know, I don't know why he doesn't go to bed. I thought that when we had children, you know, you'd put children to bed, they just fall off to sleep with those little smiles on their faces. You read them a story, and oh, they're practically asleep by the time you're done. You know, you turn off the light, and they're sleeping, they're gone. Well, not Johnny. I don't think he ever gets tired. I try to put him to bed, but maybe I'm trying to put him to bed too early. Maybe I should let him stay up until he gets tired. Just let him fall asleep. But you know, when I let him stay up too late, then I can't get him up in the morning. I don't know what to do. I'll tell you, I'm tired. I just can't take it anymore.
Lady, I've got something you need.
Oh, good. I need help.
The truth that we're going to share with you is one that is very important for every mom and dad. In fact, this truth is helpful in cutting through a lot of the stuff that goes on in parenting. The first truth is that a child's primary job is to learn to obey. Ephesians 6:1 in the New Testament says, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right." The Bible teaches that children need to learn to obey, and our job as parents is to teach obedience. Now, bedtimes are a great time to teach obedience. We're not telling children they have to go to sleep, but we are telling them that they need to go to bed. And a lot of the dynamics that happen around that bedtime experience are teaching children self-discipline, to have a bedtime, to go to bed. And we're teaching them obedience, to follow directions, and to be responsible when we've given them an instruction. Now, you may think this is a discouraging realization for children when we tell them this, but it's not. It's a very freeing thing to know. I mean, imagine a mailman who goes around picking up trash on his route. Now, there's nothing wrong with a mailman picking up trash unless he's not getting the mail delivered. Then you'd be criticizing, because delivering the mail is his job. Or a car mechanic who likes to socialize. Well, there's no problem with socializing unless he's not getting the cars fixed. He's not doing his job, because fixing cars is his job. The same thing is true with children. Learning how to obey And all that's involved in the concept of obedience is what children need to be learning and developing. That's their job. It's not an easy skill, but it's something very important for them to learn.
Now, parents sometimes think that obedience is the same as compliance. And so a parent will say, well, I usually get my child to do what I ask eventually. Well, that may be compliance, but it's not obedience. If your child does what you ask while they're making faces, or they're taking too long to do it, or they're doing it with a bad attitude, they may be complying with what you've asked, but it's not obedience. If you say to your child, it's time to go to bed now, and your child says, as soon as I'm done with this game, that's not obedience. That's an excuse for disobedience. If we say obedience is doing what I ask right away without being reminded, that's how we define obedience. Now you may be thinking, well, yes, I know that's what obedience is, but I think that obedience is more complicated than just that. I think there are a lot of parts to obedience that are important. And there are a lot of character qualities involved in obedience that can help a child to be successful. Once the child learns obedience, the child is learning how to accommodate others, how to be unselfish, how to think what the other person wants and not just themselves. A child who's learning obedience learns how to submit to authority. Obedience involves learning how to obey even when you think you have a better way or have another idea of what ought to be done. See, our child's job isn't to critique our parenting, but to obey our words.
Let's look at this from the child's perspective for a moment. What is a child supposed to do when the parent asks them to do something that they don't want to do, or that they have a better way, or they've got another idea? How's a child supposed to respond in that kind of situation?
And I don't think that's just a child's problem either. I think we, even as adults, we need to know how to respond to authority when we don't agree. I mean, what do you do if you don't agree with what your boss says or your landlord? How do you respond? What's a godly response in a situation when you don't agree with what an authority is asking of you? Even young children need to learn how to respond when they don't agree. When they find themselves in that situation, what's a young child to do when they don't want to obey? Now, we teach children when they're learning obedience that they have two responses. I'm going to share those two responses with you now. The first response, we say, obey first, and then we'll talk about it. If Timothy is pulling up a chair to climb up on the counter, and I say, Timothy, you need to get down. We're not going to climb up on that chair. And he says, but I just wanted to... No, you need to obey first, and then we'll talk about it. Once Timothy gets down off the chair, then we can talk about what the problem was, what he wanted to reach, how he could get that. We can discuss it. But he needs to obey first, and then we'll talk about it. If I say to David, David, it's time to go get your pajamas on. And he says, but I don't want to go to bed. No, you need to obey first, and then we'll talk about it. He needs to do what I've asked him to. Then he can come back, and we can discuss at what time he's going to go to bed and if he can stay up any later. But we want children to learn how to obey first, because that's an act of submission. And children shouldn't be allowed to just whine and manipulate through a situation. But sometimes they need to learn to obey first, and then we'll talk about it. And that eliminates a lot of the whining and complaining that happens in a home. We think that's an important part of obedience, is to learn that first response.
Submitting with a good attitude is part of living life. I mean, just imagine, all of us as adults need to live in environments where there are limits, where we don't appreciate them, we don't like them, but we have to live within them. If we learn how to submit and we can be flexible in that, then we can be happy people within limits. But some people never learned how to do that, and so they're continually upset and angry or discontent. I think we can teach some very valuable things to children when they're 3 and 4 to prevent what happens when they're 30 or 40. Because we're teaching them how to live within limits. We're teaching them how to be flexible, how to submit. Now, submission has gotten a bad rap in recent years, in part because of the abuses of authority. But there are some real benefits to submission. Submission is one piece of obedience. It's one of the benefits of learning how to obey. That's why we say that children need to learn how to obey. There's a lot of parts to that, and one of them is submission. But it teaches a child how to be flexible, give up your agenda for someone else's. So one of the things we're trying to do is teach children the value of submission in their own lives. And one of the ways that we do that is through this first technique, which we call obey first, and then we'll talk about it.
Now, once a child has learned how to submit and they know how to obey first, and then we'll talk about it, then we give them a second choice that they also have, and we call it the wise appeal. The wise appeal is a respectful way for the child to come back to the parent or the other adult in the situation and respectfully appeal what's they're being asked to do, respectfully ask for something different. They may have a better way, they may have another idea that they want to communicate to the adult, so we give them a respectful way to do that, and we call it the wise appeal. The Wise Appeal simply says, we give them the words to use, so it's just a little formula we give our children. I understand you want me to, and they fill in the blank. I have a problem with that because, and then they tell you what their problem is. Could I please? And then they give you another alternative. They feel, well, this is, in a sense, they have to problem solve now and say, this is what you want, this is my problem, how about we do this instead? And that's what the Wise Appeal is.
Last night, I came up and I said to Ben, Ben, time to go to bed now. I turn around, head down the hall, tell the girls, girls, time to go to bed. Ben follows me down the hall and he says, Dad, I know that you want me to go to bed. I have a problem with that because Melissa just offered to play a game with me right now for a few minutes. Could I please stay up for a little bit and play a game? Well, I didn't have a problem with that. It's okay with me if they stay up for a few minutes. So I said, okay, why don't you go ahead? I appreciate the way you're asking me nicely. You go ahead and stay up and play that game for a little bit. Ben was using the Wise Appeal with me. It's a gracious way of approaching me with another alternative. He's coming up with the other alternative. He's not just whining and complaining. You see the difference here? Most children, when they don't like what they're being told, grumble, or they whine, or they complain. We're giving them an alternative, a gracious response that they can use. When using the Wise Appeal, the child expresses understanding of the intent of the parent, but also gives an alternative of what they would like to do. You want to use this kind of technique because there's sometimes when you have to get feedback from your children. You don't just want them to obey first and then we'll talk about it. If you say to your daughter, get in the car, we're leaving, and she has to go to the bathroom, you don't want her to obey first and then we'll talk about it. You're going to get down the road and you're going to find a problem. So you want a way for her not to say that to you in a griping, complaining manner, but you want her to approach you with a gracious response that we call a Wise Appeal.
So I may say to David, David, it's time to clean up the toys now. We need to go out and run errands. And David may have just set up his train set, and I didn't know this, but he may come back to me with a Wise Appeal and say, Mom, I know you want me to put the toys away because we have to go out. I have a problem with that because I just set up the train set. Could I please play with the train a little while before we go out? Now, a child who's using the Wise Appeal needs to be able to accept no for an answer. If they can't accept no for an answer, then we put them back to response number one, obey first, and then we'll talk about it. But once the child has learned how to submit and they have a good attitude about it, we may allow for the Wise Appeal because it allows for an appreciating of their desires as well. And I may be able to say to David in that situation, okay, why don't you play for a half hour and then we can go. I might be flexible enough that day. I can do that. Or I may say to David, okay, why don't you leave the train set out? Let's go out to the store. When we get back, you can play with your train set. What this does is it opens up respectful dialogue between the parent and the child. It gives you a way to understand their wishes. They're responding to you in a respectful way, but it's communication is what's happening here. Children need to be able to accept no, but if at all possible, it's helpful to say yes and to work with them. Now, even very young children can learn the Wise Appeal. When Timothy was 3 years old, he didn't have the words down quite right, but he had the idea of the Wise Appeal. So I would say to him something like, you know, Tim, I want you to come in from playing outside now. And he would say, I really know you really want me to come inside, but I really want to stay out and play. And it was kind of a cute paraphrase, but the idea was there. He was responding to me in a respectful way. He wasn't whining and complaining, but he was trying to respond with a Wise Appeal. So as we work with our children, it's helpful to give them a technique to use when they want to respond back to us.
Parents, let me give you some advice. If you implement the Wise Appeal in your family, there are going to be times when you're going to have to say no, and you're not going to be able to change your mind. And so let me encourage you to do two things. One is, first of all, look for times when you can change your mind, just as a reinforcement of the positive communication that your child is demonstrating. If they are coming to you with a gracious and respectful appeal, you want to encourage that kind of communication. So look for ways when you can make a change. At the same time, there are going to be times when you can't do that. And this is very important, especially when you're dealing with older children. Teenagers, for example, often speak to their parents in disrespectful ways. Often it's because they don't have an alternative of a way that they can respond. If your teen does respond to you in a way that demonstrates a Wise Appeal, then you want to do what you can to reinforce that, if possible. But there are going to be times when you have to say no. And even when you say no, you want to do it in a way that reinforces their positive communication. So you don't want to just say, I already said no. You know, you don't want to do that. You want to instead say, I really appreciate the way you're talking to me, but I'm going to have to say no. And you might give a reason to help soften the blow a little bit. We're not saying that every time a child uses a Wise Appeal, that's a manipulation technique to get you to say yes. What it is a positive communication style that you want to reinforce, whether you have to say yes or no. And so it's a way for children to know how to respond. If a parent's reading a book to her daughter, Karen,
And she comes to a place where, wait, we got to stop here, this chapter, because it's time to go to bed. And Karen says, Mom, I know that it's time to go to bed, but I'm really into this book. Could you read one more chapter? Now, Mom might say, I really like the way you're talking to me. So, okay, let's read one more chapter, reinforcing the positive communication. Or she may say, you know, I'm sorry. I'm glad you're excited about the book, and I'm glad you're talking to me in that positive way, but you got to get up for school in the morning. It's already late, so I'm going to have to say no. But we'll put a marker here, and tomorrow night, we'll find out what happens to the bad guy or the good guy or whatever, and so we'll pick it up then. I'm glad you like this story. So either way, whether you have to say yes or no, go ahead and say it. Don't feel manipulated by this, but look for ways to reinforce the positive communication. It'll do dramatic things for the dialogue between you and your child.
Now, we don't want to give you the impression that we allow our children to dialogue about everything we ask them to do. But we do believe that the wise appeal is helpful for children to give them a means of communicating in a respectful way. And what you'll need to do for your own family is decide which of these two responses you want to emphasize. If your children are continually looking to dialogue and whining and having a hard time, they may need to just focus on obey first and then we'll talk about it. That's the response that your family needs to work on right now. But if your family is big on strict obedience and that's what you emphasize, you might want to allow for a wise appeal just to open up that communication between you and your child, a respectful way of talking to one another. So you really want to decide what's best for your family at any particular time, and you'll switch, you'll emphasize one at one point and emphasize another point, or maybe one child needs one response, the other child needs to work on the other. You want to decide that for yourself, what you need in your family. But I think both those responses are a helpful part of obedience.
Now, we gave an illustration of bedtimes, and bedtimes are an excellent time for children to learn obedience, to learn responsiveness to their parents. It's not so much an issue of loneliness or a drink of water. It's an issue of being able to respond to instructions that parents give. The fact that children have a primary job to learn to obey helps you cut through some of the stuff that you're thinking about when it comes to working with children at bedtime. So the first truth that parents need to remember is a child's primary job is to learn to obey. Let's go on to the second one.
You look like something's bothering you. Why don't you tell me about it?
The problem is my daughter, Kim. She has a real problem being irritating. She's really irritating. She talks too much, and she often has a conversation focused on her when she's in dialogue. If things don't go just her way, she gets upset and angry. She doesn't have many friends, and I can see why. Children don't just like to spend time with her.
Boy, that sounds like a problem. What do you think it is she needs?
Well, that's not really the problem. I have another problem. The problem is, I know what her problem is, and I know what her solution is, but when I try to tell her, she doesn't want to listen to me. I try to give her advice, I try to give her instruction, but she doesn't want to hear it. I know what will make her successful, and so I try to give her some successful ideas, but she gets angry with me. Puts me in a very awkward position. I want to be friends with my daughter. I want her to like me, but I also want to teach her at the same time. Well, I just don't know what to do. You know, you'd think that she would be grateful to listen to the advice of her dad. I mean, I've got a lot of good things to share with her. You know, I've been around a few more years than she is. I just wish that she would be grateful for that and take advantage of some of the wisdom that I have. I could share with her a lot of things. You know, I don't know what it is about young people these days. They just don't know what's good for them. Well, I hate to admit it, but, you know, there's sometimes when I know I should correct her, but I don't correct her because I know I'm going to incur this abuse from her. And so I don't follow through. In fact, sometimes I just ignore the things that she's doing because I know if I get into it, it's going to be into it. And then I'm going to, oh, I don't want to deal with this. And so, frankly, I know I don't correct her as often as I should. You got any advice for me?
You know, I have something I'd like to share with you.
Oh, good.
The second truth that's especially helpful for children who don't respond well to discipline. Sometimes it seems that children resent the fact that they're the children and we're the parent. So truth number two that we'd like to talk about now is that since discipline is unpleasant, be prepared for resistance. Hebrews 12:11 says, "No discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it."
Now, discipline involves giving advice, giving instructions, as well as giving consequences. As we interact with our children, we're disciplining them, but sometimes they don't receive that. They don't want to hear it from us. They seem to resent the fact that we're giving them an instruction or some advice, and they respond negatively to that. We want to remember to expect some resistance as we work with our children, and we want to be prepared for it. Now, that may seem obvious, but have you ever disciplined your child, and then when they respond negatively or they become unhappy, then you've second-guessed yourself, say, well, maybe that wasn't the right thing to do. Maybe I shouldn't have done that. It's as if, you know, we'd like our child to say something like,
Mom, I haven't learned that yet. Would you go over that one more time for me?
Wouldn't that be nice? Unfortunately, our children aren't going to say that. But often we second-guess ourselves because our children respond negatively.
It's as if we expect our child to say,
thanks, Dad, for sending me to my room. I really appreciate those limits you set for me.
Or,
hey, Dad, I really appreciate it that you make me clean up my room and make my bed.
Yeah, see, sometimes we expect our children to do just that, don't we? We don't say it, but that's what we're thinking. And when we get the opposite response and children are not pleased with the instruction we give, we're disappointed that they're not responding in that positive way. We wish they would respond that way, but they don't. Now, we would not be so blatant, but that's certainly what we're thinking oftentimes. If we expect our children to always appreciate our discipline, we are going to be frustrated parents. It has to do with our expectations of how our children are going to respond, and then what we're going to do in response to their response. If you're expecting your children are going to respond positively and they don't, then you're going to get frustrated and become angry.
When I send David to his room and he stomps all the way there, I know I now have two problems. We've got the original offense, and we also have the bad attitude toward discipline. Okay, both these things need to be addressed. We're going to expect resistance from our children, but we don't want them to just get away with it either. That's not what we're saying. We want to train our children to accept discipline, to respond to it graciously. We want them to take that correction and realize that it's good for them. But that doesn't come naturally. It develops over time as our children mature, and we work with them we talk to them about their response to discipline. We work with them, help them to see that the correction is for their good. We talk about their attitude and the condition of their heart. But all this takes time. So if David's going to stomp off to his room, I'm going to deal with that original offense, and I'm also going to deal with his attitude toward discipline because we think that's really important. We want him to learn to respond graciously and humbly to correction. Two of the Bible verses that we use in our family that the boys have learned to appreciate. One of them is Proverbs 12:1. A wise son accepts being corrected, but a person who hates being corrected is stupid. It's one verse. My kids really like that one. They're amazed that the word stupid is in the Bible, so they get a kick out of that one. But it's meaningful for them. They understand what's trying to be communicated here. Another one is Proverbs 13:1. A wise son takes his father's advice, but a person who makes fun of wisdom won't listen to correction. She's talking about a response to discipline that is positive. Children should learn that the correction is for their own good and be able to accept that. And that's our goal for them. But we need to realize that that's not where they're at most often when they're younger. They're going to respond with some resistance when we correct them.
Although we want our children to respond to us positively, we also want to expect that they may not. The word expectation being used there to describe the fact that we're not going to be deterred if they're treating us unkindly when discipline comes. On the other hand, we are going to want to set a standard for their behavior so that they are responding positively to discipline. We don't want to excuse their bad response and let it go. We want to continue to work on a positive response to discipline on their part. But on the other hand, we want our expectations to be such that we are not going to be dissuaded when we see something from them that isn't encouraging as we're trying to be the parent and set limits for them. We don't want to let a bad attitude get in the way. You know, as parents, we often want to make our children happy. We want them to like us. And that desire to have them like us and make them happy can get in the way of some of the limits that we want to set for our children. But sometimes the loving thing to do is to set those limits, to allow children to experience the pain of discipline, which comes from their own bad choices.
So when you need to discipline your child and your child responds negatively to that, you want to remember that discipline isn't intended to be fun. We need to expect some resistance from our children. We want to be able to persevere through that resistance, knowing that the discipline we're giving is what's good for our child. It's for their own good, whether they realize that or not. And so that can help us to persevere through when we're getting that resistance, and we can realize that there'll be other times that we can make our child happy.
When one of my children is having a hard time accepting the correction that I'm giving them, I don't want to allow their immediate response to indicate to me that my discipline is ineffective. I don't want to second guess myself in that regard. I don't want to be controlled in my response to them and setting the limits by the response that I'm receiving from my child. I want to remember that I'm disciplining for long-term benefit, and that helps me to carry through some of those difficult times. So the second truth that I remember is, since discipline is unpleasant, I want to be prepared for resistance.
So the parent who is cowering in discipline because the child is unresponsive needs to adopt this truth. It'll be quite freeing, actually, for that parent to recognize that there's going to be resistance. We can expect that resistance. We can even be prepared for it before we go ahead with that discipline, realizing that discipline is unpleasant and the child is not going to like it, but that's part of what discipline is all about. It's not supposed to be fun. There's other times that we're going to have fun with our children. The children are not going to be grateful for the discipline, and we still need to persevere in that anyway.
Okay, now, I understand here you have three children. Is that right? How's it going?
Yes. Terrible. I'm having a really hard time. You know, I feel like I have to be so harsh with the kids all the time. I don't like it. I don't even like to hear myself with them. And yet, it's like they've trained me to be angry. It's like if I don't respond with anger, they're not going to do anything. So I have to get angry. It's like their fault that I'm angry, you know? And I don't like it, but what else can I do? I mean, I'm making dinner and one of them comes in and wants a snack. They want ice cream. And I say, no, you can't have ice cream. And the next one comes in and wants the same thing. I said, didn't you just hear what I said? You know, I just feel like I have to be negative with them. I'll send Charlie to go clean up the toys. You know, when I go back and check on him, he's playing with the toys. I can't believe it. I said, what are you doing? You haven't done anything I've asked you to do. I just, you know, it's really hard to be so negative all the time, but I mean, the kids just do that to me. You know, I'll send Susan to go put her shoes on because we have to go out, and then she sits down and reads a book, and, you know, what are you doing? It's just really hard to be so negative with kids, but I don't know what else to do. My family's a real mess.
I've got some good things I want to share with you. This third truth that we're going to share with you now is especially helpful for parents who look at themselves and they don't like what they see. They feel like they're being harsh, that there's tension that they're experiencing in the relationship, that they see anger in themselves. Truth number three is that discipline should be positive. Ephesians 6:4 says, "Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord." The first part of that verse says, don't exasperate, which has the idea of harshness or causing discouragement. Don't have that kind of relationship with your kids. Rather, it says, bring them up in the instruction and discipline of the Lord. That's a positive response that's being instructed there. You see, discipline should be positive. It should be teaching times. It should focus on what actions are going to take place right next time. There's a difference between punishment and discipline. Punishment focuses on past misdeeds that a child's done. Punishment is like a sentence for a crime committed. It looks on the negative, whereas discipline focuses on the positive. It's looking toward the right kind of actions that a child's going to do next time. What we're suggesting here is that parents want to try to remain positive when they need to correct or redirect their children.
Now, you may be thinking to yourselves, well, yes, discipline is supposed to be positive, but how can I be positive when my kids are doing the wrong thing? I mean, you know, we're having a problem with them. How can we be positive? And there's several ways that you can work at making discipline times more positive experiences, but it's going to take some work, and we're going to share two of those ways with you now. One thing that you can do to help make discipline a more positive experience is to state rules and requests in positive terms. Instead of saying, don't shout, you'll say, we talk quietly in the store. It's just rewording what you're saying, but it's going to have a different effect on your child, and I think on yourself as well. By clearly stating or restating the instruction in positive terms, what you're doing is giving the child a picture of what they're supposed to be doing, in a sense, a positive picture of what's expected. Instead of complaining about the clothes all over your daughter's room, you may say, hey, remember, we put our clothes in the hamper when we take them off. You know, we just want to say things in positive terms as much as possible. Instead of saying, stop banging that drum, you may say, you can take that drum outside or in your room. And here's here we're giving two positive alternatives a child can choose from, and it keeps us from being quite so negative with them if we try and state the rules and request in positive terms.
Another way that we can be positive with our children is to find approximately right behavior and affirm it, rather than wait for absolutely right behavior. Approximately right behavior is behavior that's moving in the direction that we want. Absolutely right behavior means that they've arrived. Some parents look for absolutely right behavior and criticize everything else along the line until we get there. We're encouraging parents to look for approximately right behavior and affirm that because it's moving in the direction that we're trying to get the child to go. So if a child has a room that's messy and they've got six things they need to do, and you walk in there and they've cleaned up the blocks and put the trucks in order, then you can say, hey, I like the way you put the blocks in the bag, and I like the way you put the trucks in order. Now, why don't you pick up the balls there and start putting the Legos away? So there's a positive way of looking at what's going on, because we're reaffirming, or we're affirming not absolute behavior, but behavior that's moving in the right direction.
When my son Timothy was learning to get dressed, we had a rule that he needed to be dressed before he came to the breakfast table. So if he came down the stairs in the morning with his shirt on backwards and his shoes missing, we still praised him. He was trying. He was trying to do the right thing. He wasn't quite there yet, but he was approximately right. At least he had a shirt on, and it was, you know. So we praised him for what he had done. We didn't want to be discouraging, pointing out the things that he had missed. I think if your child is having a hard time with a homework assignment, you want to focus on what they've done already and encourage them about what's done rather than just focusing on what needs to be done yet. We want to be as positive as possible with our children when that's appropriate. We want to remember that positive reinforcement is much more effective than negative reinforcement. And so we want to be able to dish out that praise in large portions whenever we have the opportunity, looking for things that our child is doing right, things that they're trying to do, direction that they're headed, and praise those things.
Although we want our children to strive for excellence in life, we don't want to discourage them on the way. And so we're looking for approximately right behavior in order to affirm them in the process so they can enjoy moving in that direction and get the praise and affirmation that they need. Sometimes we become tired and discouraged as parents because we look at ourselves and we see we are being negative day after day, hour after hour with our children. Parents who are seeing themselves be negative like that need to look for creative ways to become positive. If you find yourself continually saying stop to your child, or no is a common word that you use, you want to look for ways that you can change that. It takes some work because we develop habits as parents. And those habits often are negative habits. We criticize for the things that we see that are wrong instead of looking for ways that we can focus on the positive. We want to affirm children. We want to praise them. We want to talk about and interact with them on things about things that they're doing right. When you do that kind of thing, when you start developing a positive way of speaking with your child and looking for things that are approximately right and dialoguing with them in a positive way, you'll see that your attitude toward your child changes and that their attitude changes as well.
This is the end of this tape. We hope this session has been a valuable one for you. Maybe it would be helpful for you to stop right now and write something down you intend to do differently this week before going on to listen to the next tape. Each tape will provide new helpful insights to work on in your family before you move on. If you would like more information about effective parenting, please call us at area code 609-771-8002 or 1-800-771-8334. We're here to help you.